from the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, our very special Friday night into Saturday morning open line. So get ready for that. At the end of the hour, a little quick visit by Dr. Morgus as well. So a whole bunch on our plate. Well, did you get your tax return in the mail on time out there? Well, President Bush did. As a matter of fact, he reported adjusted gross income of $784,219 for last year, which he paid $207,000 in federal taxes. That's about $20,000 less than the previous year, according to the president's return that was released on Friday. In 2003, the president and the first lady, Laura Bush, reported $822,000 in adjusted gross income and paid $227,000 in federal taxes. On their 2004 return, the Bushes listed his income, his presidential salary of about $400,000, and investment income from trusts that they hold. Two upcoming government reports will say the quality of screening at airports is no better now than before September 11 attacks. That according to a House member who apparently has been briefed on the contents. I don't know when the last time you have been to an airport, but I think these people are pretty darn efficient, to tell you the truth. They make you take your shoes off, your belt off, and everything else almost. The Government Accountability Office, investigative arm of Congress, and the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General are expected to soon release their findings on the performance of the Transportation Security Administration. They call it the TSA screeners. A lot of people, they say, will be shocked at the billions of dollars we've spent and the results we're going to see. Well, meanwhile, improving the ability of screeners to find dangerous items has been the goal since the government took over the task at about 450 airports in early 2002 and hired more than 45,000 workers. Plans requiring passports from people entering the United States don't pass muster with President Bush, who has ordered a review of this border security effort amid fears that it would impede legal travel from Canada, Mexico, and U.S. neighbors. You see, all of this is part of the intelligence overhaul law. It's what it is. It's part of it. The problem is the president was unaware of this passport measure in the law, which he signed, by the way. The proposed guidelines would require passports or a select number of other secure documents from anyone, including Americans, entering the United States from Canada, Mexico, Bermuda, the Caribbean, and Panama. The rules were scheduled to become final this fall. Fire sweeping through a central Paris hotel used by immigrants and tourists, killing at least 20 people, including 10 children. They're still looking for the cause. In New York, a teenager being held on $100,000 bail. He pleads not guilty to charges that he raided a tomb in a cemetery, removed the head of the corpse. Wendy's International has doubled a reward to $100,000 it's offering for the information on the origin of a human finger found last month in a bowl of chili at one of its restaurants. The chief operating officer of Wendy's says, look, our sales are significantly down. We didn't do anything wrong. We want to find out how this all happened. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories, take a look at the one about oil reserves are increasing, something I've been talking about for some time now. And they cite some examples of where there was a spot oil production in the Gulf of Mexico producing, in this area, 4,000 barrels a day in 1989. It's increased now to 13,000 barrels a day. And apparently in other regions of the country and the world, this is happening all over the place. Thomas Gold, an astronomer and professor emeritus of Cornell, held for years that oil is actually renewable, that it's almost like a syrup continually manufactured by the Earth under ultra-hot conditions and tremendous pressures. Interesting story. We'll do a show on that. The shuttle Discovery emerged from a cocoon of protective metal gantries to undergo a final test stemming from the 2003 Columbia accident. The object of inquiry was the same item that failed on Columbia, the massive bullet-shaped fuel tank newly remodeled since the fatal accident. NASA is aware that the tank will never again be looked upon as the passive backbone of the shuttle system, which also includes the winged orbiter and a pair of solid rocket boosters. The accident showed that the tank's foam insulation, necessary to keep the shuttle's exotic rocket propellants as cold as minus 423 degrees Fahrenheit, was as great a hazard as the explosive solid rocket boosters, which claimed the shuttle Challenger and killed 7 astronauts 20 years ago. Well, as a matter of fact, in just a few weeks, April 22nd, 23, and 24 in San Francisco will be the New Living Expo. I'll be there, by the way, on that Sunday, the 24th, for a little speech. Be a lot of speakers there, including, of course, Danyon Brinkley and Sean David Morton. Now, in a moment, this half hour, the remote viewing prophecies of Sean David Morton. Well, his name is Sean David Morton, a natural psychic, a trained remote viewer and remote viewing instructor, an intuitive consultant, an investigative reporter, and accomplished award-winning producer, director, and screenwriter for television and film. Sean uses his talents and abilities to predict future occurrences and trends, such as the earth changes, political events, and stock market fluctuations. Stock market really took it on the chin today, by the way. He has an outstanding hit rate or percentage of success, and he's been an honored guest on this program for the past 13 years, since his first appearance with Art Bell around 1991. So maybe that's even 14 years now. Sean, how are you?
God bless you, Uncle George. How are you, my friend?
You too, my friend, too. I want to talk a little bit about your predictions, but you, I finally get a chance to meet face-to-face in a few weeks.
I think it's just great that you're out there pressing the flesh and talking to people, and people, you need to get out there so people can see what a handsome guy you really are.
Well, Sean, you're really doing some inaccurate remote viewing. Huh?
No, it's just great that you're coming to the shows, you're coming to the expos, and the show that they're having up in San Francisco. It's where the original Whole Life Expos originally started. It's where a lot of this alternative thought began at. Of course, there's no more alternative places on Earth, I guess, than Stanford and Berkeley across the bay. So
that's
it was
right.
It was just where so many things started in the late 60s and 70s and then kind of steamrolled. And I try to tell people that if you get a chance to come out and meet the speakers and talk to people, that you're really looking at the future, that you're looking at that if you look back 20 years ago or even 10 years ago or so, that every time you go to these shows and you go to these expos, you find that there's always cutting-edge modalities in health and spirituality and thought. The things that are being taught at these shows and these expos are what everybody's going to start thinking and feeling 10 years from now. I mean, look at how many things were introduced from yoga to vegetarianism to alternative energy to conspiracy theories. My goodness, all these fantastic things that have become mainstream. In so many ways, thanks to these kind of shows and expos, and also thanks to, you know, dispersal over your radio show and the internet and you know, all kinds of things. So it's a great opportunity to actually meet these, I think, some of the most brilliant minds on the planet, and certainly some of the most creative and freest thinkers, and literally people that are on the cutting edge of reality and on the cutting edge of where our future is going. And I certainly hope that. And I applaud you, and I think people need to realize that, you know, you're a big-time radio host, and you taking the time to go out there and meet and greet people, it really shows, I think, your dedication to the topic matter, dedication to the phenomenon, and dedication to changing the world, which is what you're really all about.
Well, you know, and let me tell you, Sean, actually, by doing that, I think it makes me and the program better, because you go out, you learn, you talk, you get feedback on a one-on-one basis, mm-hmm. and it's really important. The website is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. We've got a whole section devoted to the New Living Expo, but
right.
It's newlivingexpo.com. What have you been doing lately since we last talked in November, I guess? Right?
It's been a while. You have to. My apologies for not being on the show. What I'm going to try to do is I've been working on my book called The Vajra Chronicles, which is about a post-life progression, if you will. I did back in 1994. That had a whole body of predictions and trends and all of these kind of amazing prophecies and predictions that have come true from back then. So we've got some independent researchers that have taken that original material, and so I'm in the process of writing that book, and that book will be out next month, and then I hope to be able to premiere it on this program. So I've also been touring with some film festivals. I did a kind of a comedy, fun murder mystery that I won Best Comedy at the Sedona Film Festival. I won Best Director at the New York International Film and Video Festival. Just this fun little comedy that I did called Joe Killionaire, which was kind
of
it's a takeoff on reality TV very much. And at the same time, we're putting the deals in place to try to get by this summer a documentary that I shot in 2003 that's near and dear and very important to me called The Prophecy of the Pyramids, because we shot that back in 2003. And outside of that, just traveling and talking to a lot of expos and just trying to hunker down and write and work so we can kind of spring everything onto the world this year.
Well, let me tell you, I looked at your past prophecies over the last year, and you had an astounding hit rate again.
Thank you.
Do you see anything in the next 6 months to a year? I mean, what's the rest of this year going to be like?
Well, let me tell you, as I said, and let me just reiterate a couple of things, that we said on the program in October, back in November, back in all the way back through September or so. And it's been really great because so many people have, just a rare opportunity that this is, that I can have these visions and I can have these thoughts and these feelings, and so many other people out there are having the same dreams and the same thoughts and mm-hmm. the same feelings. And I've been given this fabulous forum to be able to chat with you and to chat with Art and talk to you about what I see. In the last remote viewing class that we did, and this is going back almost a year, because back in July of 2004, and then back in September, I believe it was, and then we just did another remote viewing class about 2 months ago. When I teach the classes, what I do is at the very end we do sort of a group predictions, if you will. We get maps out. I teach people a technique that we call cartomancy, which is where we get maps of the United States and then the world out, and people either use the energy from their hands or use pendulums over the maps to start coming up with hot spots as to where they see trouble might be brewing on the map, and then to use the remote viewing techniques that I've taught them to be able to focus on that. And let me tell you, the fascinating thing about this is that dealing with about anywhere between, say, 60 and 100 people per class, and have all these people come up with the exact same predictions virtually
at the
same time.
Yeah.
Is really stunning, because it just doesn't happen in the regular course of business, if you will. So let me tell you some of the interesting things that they're talking about for the rest of the year. We scanned, and I've talked about this before, so let me just reiterate again, a great deal of concern about the Pacific Northwest. And one of the things that all three classes picked, going all the way back to, as I said, July of 2004, was to watch this May. Right around late May 21st, 22nd, 23rd, deep underground earthquake activity underneath Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens, Mount Baker, the entire Pacific Cascade Range, and also directly off the coast of Seattle and Vancouver. What the classes saw and what we all came to a consensus on was that, and as I said, three classes, completely separate, completely independent of each other, with the simple question of simply scan this part of the world, came up with May through approximately late September, October, for a great deal of increased activity in the Pacific Northwest, underneath Mount Rainier, underneath Mount St. Helens. We kept asking if there was an eruption, if there was something that was going to be, and the class kept getting that they felt earthquakes first, and then the possibility of an eruption by late September, October. I seem to think that maybe Mount Baker near to Mount Rainier may be the cause of most consternation first, but at least there may be we're seeing Lahores, which are these massive mudslides
sure.
coming off the mountain.
What about the Yellowstone caldera?
The Yellowstone caldera we also checked specifically. At the same time that we've got And of course, there was this a BBC special on a couple of nights ago called Super Volcano, I think it was.
Right.
The great thing is you get like a glass of wine and you drink every time they say magma. That's a great kind of new age drinking game there.
You gulp.
Yeah, exactly. And we, my wife and I were just kind of fooling around with it. It's like, you know, they said magma like 10 times in the course of like, you know, 2 minutes. The Yellowstone caldera, once again, seems to be activating at the same period of time between May all the way through the middle of 2006, with most of the energy that we found coming out 2006. Now, we didn't see at that time, remember this is long-range predictions now,
right.
Long-range projections, we did not see at that time a massive eruption, but what we did see is deadly clouds of gas coming out of the caldera, killing herds of animals, killing possibly people in certain areas of Yellowstone. We did not see, as I said, an explosion, but we saw small pockets of eruption where we saw actually, like I said, the gas beginning to erupt and also sections of the caldera that began to kind of collapse in upon themselves.
Did you see a time period with this?
Well, as I said, between now and about, it starts activating again late May this year. And then it seems to have a very, very long boil all the way through about the end of 2006.
So this is going to be tied in then with the Pacific Rim earthquakes and
exactly.
Everything else.
Well, right. The Yellowstone caldera geographically is at the, there's a huge Y in the western part of the United States. The left hand of the Y is Mount Rainier. The right hand of the Y is the Yellowstone caldera. And then it comes down, and the very bottom of the Y, the bottom of the flume, if you will, butts into Southern California. So specifically, now we also looked at, I know I don't have a lot of time tonight, but we also looked into when there's activity, obviously, in the Yellowstone caldera. And one of the things I've always noticed about Southern California is that whenever there are earthquakes or volcanic activity directly off the coast of Eureka or in Eureka, within 30 to 90 days, there are fires and then substantial earthquake activity in Southern California. Now, for years, I've been saying that the big one that everybody is worried about is not going to come in Southern California until approximately 2010. And I've been calling it, strangely enough, the actual fault line, that in the future, every time I view it, a couple of interesting things happen with Los Angeles. I see a building that is just to the left of downtown LA that seems to be a huge tower that has an angel with a glowing sword on top of the tower. I also see something, an emergency situation somehow, where for whatever reason Los Angeles gets the Olympics at like the last minute, somewhere around 2000.
Like a switch?
Something happens, yes. In other words, I believe that the Olympics are going to go to New York City and that there are going to be disasters, substantial disasters in New York City that will not allow New York to host the Olympics, and it is then switched to Los Angeles, because everything I see around the prediction is LA is being called the Olympic City. There's a great deal of building going on, and I believe this tower has something to do, and it's huge. It dwarfs the downtown the San Juan building, and it dwarfs the downtown skyline.
But you don't see the Olympics being canceled because of these disasters then?
Here in Los Angeles?
Well, no, you would think, though, if there was a disaster in a major U.S. city, that they wouldn't shift the Olympics. They'd simply say, we're not going to have them. It may not be what some people might think, then.
I see them shifting them. I see that there's enough warning that the city says we can't do them, and the shift comes back to Los Angeles at some point for L.A. to get the Olympics in 2012.
Okay.
And then, and as I said, there's a tower that has an angel with a flaming sword on it, and the quake is called the Hermosa quake, because it's right off the beach of Hermosa. And just 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure if you felt this or not, but we had a 3.4 quake in the bay off Manhattan Beach.
I heard about that. I did not feel it because I'm secured here.
Big rolling shock. It felt as though somebody like slammed a garage door or lit off a stick of dynamite. But it was just a short, sharp shock that went through the area. Strangely enough, and this is another kind of odd thing, we looked at Southern California, all three classes. Looked at Southern California, nothing for Southern California through,
well,
I mean, we're not talking about anything, when I say nothing, you know, 4.5s, maybe a 5.
Which are normal.
Right, which are normal. We're not talking about anything above like a 6.5 or anything substantial.
Good.
Apparently all through the rest of this year, and then through approximately. There's an event in 2006 that's not substantial, but that is also, and we're looking at September, October of 2006 for being a substantial, we're talking major earthquake in the San Francisco area around that time.
We will see Sean David Morton at the New Living Expo in San Francisco.
Can't wait to meet you, George.
You too, and the website DelphiAssociates.org, correct?
Yeah, yes, sir, and you can call 888-452-7999 to order the Delphi Associates newsletter.
All right, Sean, we'll see you in a few weeks.
Thanks, sir.
In a moment, he was hit by lightning a couple times. He died, but he's come back to talk about it. Our friend Danion Brinkley will be back.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, still a few more weeks to take advantage of the After Dark CD, where you get 2.5 hours of bumper music, some really unforgettable calls to the show, and some ghost stories. Go to the website, afterdarkcd.com. If you happen to be on the coasttocoastam.com website, it's right down there at the bottom of the homepage. Or you can call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. Danion Brinkley has been struck by lightning two times, once in 1975 while talking on the telephone in his home of all places, and again in 1978 while talking on the phone again in a different home 8 miles away. It's chasing him. Danion is the author of The Secrets of the Light, Saved by the Light, and At Peace in the Light. He is loved and respected worldwide for his inspirational lectures on the near-death experience. He also does something that I want you to know about. He spends and has spent most of his life in a volunteer service. He's been at the bedside of more than 340 people now at the point of death, more than 1,200 during their final days, accruing more than 16,000 hours of service, visits Veterans Administration hospitals to be with soldiers and wounded vets. And I'm telling you, he is an inspiration to a lot of people. Danion Brinkley will be at also the New Living Expo the week of April 22nd, 23rd, 24th in San Francisco. Hello, my friend. How are you, Danion?
Hey, George. How are you?
Good. How are you feeling? Because the last time I had heard, you were battling something, and it sounds like you've recovered.
That's about the same thing. It's always something. You know, when you get struck by lightning a couple of times, George, it really changes around your chemistry. And you know, it has a dramatic effect on your health, and then open heart surgery and brain surgery, you know, not even supposed to have lived through those. And now that people who are struck by lightning in the National Institute for Health, we're considered a rare disorder because of the what happens, the difference between being struck by lightning and people who are electrocuted. It's a complete different phenomenon that's now a branch of medicine because we're living longer. But sometimes I push too hard and my blood gets out of whack, and you know, it's just things that go wrong, phantom pains, and you know, you rewire your chemistry. But I never expected to live this long, and I think it's the love of being at the bedside and my wife and kids and you and Tom, you know, and my brothers and sisters and friends out there. But it gives you that place, that strength, that will, that want to help, because I know there's no such thing as death.
Well, let me tell you, Daniel, I wanted to tell you this, because if anybody can do something in terms of prayer, it's you. Richard C. Hoagland, about an hour ago, sent me an email that was sent to him by a person by the name of Thor Heinen, who does the graphics for the EnterpriseMission.com website. Apparently, there's a little 7-year-old boy named Tucker who's got some kind of cancer, very rare cancer in his liver. And this poor kid, 7 years old, is apparently spitting up a pint of blood a day. He's lost 11 pounds, and they say
he
keeps fighting. They don't tell me exactly where he is, but his family, of course, you know, is positive, but of course concerned, because it's a fatal cancer.
Well, you know, nature has its way. I mean, I live around death, so it's not such a frightening, horrible thing to me. But no parent can survive the loss of a child. And so if I could, I can put on, you know, I have a section in the Secrets of the Light about prayer, and I call it willful conscious intent. And by structuring, there are patterns of structure that I learned this from art when I got, when I had brain surgery. I never really thought much about prayer until Art went on the air, and you know, the experiments he used to do was make it rain everywhere, and then Larry Dawsey and the whole concept of non-local healing and the work of Wayne Jonas and the Samuel I Institute. And you know, prayer works. And so if everybody takes a moment, and it doesn't matter how you do it, and we focus on this child and do this show, that we dedicate the rest of this show and the rest of this night to our hearts opening up and surrounding this child and putting as much love but as we can, because we're capable of this. One thing about being dead, George, you learn that we're multidimensional, that we live in different dimensions, and that we're not just focused. We focus a lot here because we can feel pain here and we carry this body, but we operate in whole multi-levels of the so-called non-local. And I think that's what I try to teach people. So to let this night, and all of us who has a heart that's beating and is breathing air, that our breath this night and our heartbeats surround this family. And we put as much love in whatever the destiny of this family is to be, what lessons they came to learn, what lessons he came to teach, where this child is and where Tucker is. And so every heartbeat and every breath, everybody think consciously that that surrounding energy is there. We've proven so much about what, just like what Sean David was saying earlier, in these expos. I have seen the future unfold in these expos. I love to take my kids and watch their minds open to endless possibilities. But even more important, George, is you develop friendships and common bonds in these, and especially with Kenny and his crew. You develop relationships, but you have people who are vendors, where you don't have to just watch the show or listen to over the all the people who are talking. You get a chance to walk out, pick one up, and buy it. I buy all my Christmas presents and birthday presents and stuff for people at these programs because you can't find it anywhere else. And it's really a joy. So now that we're breathing and thinking about Tucker, death is the permanent issue from now for the next couple of years. The Supreme Court's going to be dealing with it. We look at this case in Florida. We look at the Pope. And how many of you think of those presidents that were sitting there was not looking at their mortality?
Well, you know, this week I had a meeting down at the Disney Studios on a project. And I walked in there, and there's this picture of Walt Disney there. You know, this creative guy who got all this going, Daniel. And I looked at the picture for a moment, and I did the first thing that struck me. Not the man's greatness, not his creativeness, but I said to myself, he's dead. He's gone. And, you know, the man lived his life. He's off in the hereafter now, but he's gone. And it's going to happen to all of us. And for one of the first times in my life now, I'm really beginning to realize that all of us will not live forever physically. And then it was kind of a exciting thought about what's there on the other side. You've seen that.
Absolutely. And this is why I see I have a way that I can help people. I've made this journey 3 times, and I've been around death for 29 years. Yesterday, I'm so excited about this. Yesterday, I got my 10,000 hours at the bedside from the Veterans Administration. I've logged 10,000 hours at the bedside of dying veterans, and they have an award. And I was so happy to get it because I feel like I'm really taking what's happened to me and looking at it from the last 30 years and seeing how to make it positive and help people understand that fear and being afraid, we're all terminal. Okay, and the faster we face this and we deal with it in a spiritual sense, there is a life after death. My whole programs are about this. But more importantly, there are things that I know because I've been over there. And I stay in it. I live, eat, and breathe the death and the paradigms and the medicines and the science because I'm a hospice volunteer and I'm at the bedside. And when you have that many hours, you have a tendency to really understand it. But it's really important that we, as this evolution is about to come in this next 7-year period, this was the predictions, the prophecies, and Saved by the Light, the things that I wrote down. You know, I wrote down 117 things, and I'm not as good as Sean David because I couldn't interpret it as well. But nonetheless, the flow of things to 2004 and now this next 7 years will be the most dramatic shift in our consciousness that we've had since in the last 2000.
Well, I had a chance to talk with the president of our network a couple of days ago. We were talking about, my tenure at Coast, and I came in and said, look, 2012 is an important date for me, and he understands that, and he wants to know a little bit about that date and things like that. But, you know, that's going to be for you, Daniel, for me, for all the Coast listeners, as we approach that 2012 date, whatever could happen. I still don't know. It's going to be a fascinating period.
Oh, we are starting now. 2005. The whole line of this, what I've done with The Secrets of the Light, the 3 books, the trilogy, and The Secrets, I tell people how to get ready. You know, how to look at death. I can look at death back this way. I can stand at the precipice and look from over there back over here. And in the course of that, there's so many things that I can keep people from having to deal with because it's not necessary or it's untrue, especially about their spirituality. These next 2 years now, 2005 and 6, will be one of the great changes all the way to 2008. And what will happen is we'll become more aware of the worlds or the dimensions that are around us. This is the great shift in consciousness, and you're dealing with the Mayan calendar of December the 11th, 2012. Well, the predictions that I saw, the things that I saw went to 2014. Okay, and then after 2004, you can go look at Secrets Saved by the Light, written in 1993, and where I said the world would be in 2004 is based on that vision. You can turn on CNN, and it's right there, and that book's 10 years old. And I updated the prophecies and looked at the things that I didn't quite see exactly right, but what I wrote down originally in 1976 and where we are today, it shows that the spiritual realm knows the probable possibilities of what we're doing here. And I believe we choose to come here and we're chosen to come here. And I have a list of what I call the 7 truths that's in The Secret, and then ways to put into play the usefulness of the transition. If we're going to shift in consciousness by becoming more aware of, first, our immortality, but also that we are not alone. And one of those questions, it's dimensional. that there are dimensional realities that I see a lot of times. You know, just something will click inside me, and I will go into one of these states of consciousness, and I found that a lot of people being struck by lightning, and lightning shamans throughout history go through this stuff too. But there is so much stuff that we can be less afraid of. And as these events unfold that they would normally frighten us, they empower us. Once you realize that you are forever, you chose to come here, and you were chosen to come. You have direct purposes and direct events in your life. And we are now getting ready with this new pope. You know, Malarkey said there was only going to be two more popes, and this one would return to become the Italian.
We'll find out.
Well, it'll either be the German or this Italian guy. Yeah. And that they were going to go and make an effort, a concerted effort, to reestablish a framework in Israel and the Palestinian settlement, that this would be one of the main driving forces of what would happen when this church comes into play. And this is one of the events that I saw. I mean, I didn't understand it then, but if I look right now, I can understand it. But you know what, George? I want people to come to, I know Sean was mentioning it, where you're coming and where I'm going to be there, and a lot of other people that are going to be there, that gives you an opportunity to take a break from it and to take a good look, to assimilate where we are and the opportunities and the options that we have. I know I enjoyed seeing you when we were in L.A. and how great it was, and Tom, and it's just, do you find friendships?
Absolutely. You know, we've had guests on the program, Danion. Everyone knows them. They believe that there's doom and gloom out there. I never hear that from you.
Well, I see the horror of it. I mean, I see the horror of so many things. But I understand that we are infinite. I understand that there's a method by which you leave this world, and I have myself experienced it. And you know, George, people who know my story, I didn't give a crap. I come from South Carolina, you know, and everybody goes to hell in the Deep South.
You were mean.
Oh, God, I still have a little taste of it, but I'm nothing like I was, because I have experienced this process that we call death. And I have taken it up to take in my life to make a difference, to reduce the fear of death. I believe the most paramount place of control and manipulation of us won't be over oil. It'll be over health care. And I have believed this since this vision has come. And if people who know me know, I have never stopped a day in this last 30 years to accentuate the things, the changes in medicine and the changes in consciousness, and to make people aware and to be able to help people have closure and reduce the fear. Because if we get this behind us, we will take back control of our spiritual destiny instead of the fear of the frailty of our human destiny. And it's so important. I love the shows, you know, Art of Bit Art, and you, and the people who are really trying to open up people's minds and to open up their hearts, because that's when it really starts. I'm not a doom and gloomer, although I see a lot of this terrible stuff. But I know that life is purposeful, it has meaning and direction, and we chose to create the situations we find ourselves in because we spiritually believe there's nothing we can't figure out how to get out of. And we have to take that up in our minds and become that actual part, or we will push our country and we will push this world to the brink of extinction. And, you know, you look at where we are, you look at what, like the mercury poison and the food we eat and the things that we talk about in our health, and where are these points that we can truly do something about? And what I love about it, the most important point, is that we are doing it in small ways and even in larger ways. We're making a difference. I believe that health care and the quality of health care and the spiritual connection between the two is the key to us saving ourselves from some really dire possibilities in the future. But you know what? I chose to come here. I chose to come here to be a part of this great unfoldment, this evolution of spiritual consciousness in the physical form. And I was chosen because I believe I can make a difference. The same system all of us use. But let me tell you the most important, George. I've seen the Panoramic Life Review. the Great Book of Judgment, the Akashic Record. Everybody has a little name for it.
Right.
But there is a system, and what I've become the expert in the near-death experience, only because it was the most amazing part to me that I could bring it back here. That knowledge of how it works when you see your life pass before you is the key to changing. It's the key to a person having control of their life and being able to make the right decisions at the right time and to be able to affect and influence others toward helping them make the right decisions and choices without ever controlling or pushing these people in a way that's dictatorial or dogmatic. If you know that your entire life is going to pass before you, like a hologram, you've missed nothing. And you can watch it from a second person point of view, like we watch our friends and our children, and like they watch us. And then you're going to literally become every person that you've ever encountered. And you're going to feel the interaction between you and that person, exactly what was felt. You automatically know to be nicer. You automatically know to be kinder. You automatically know that you're going to be that person. So it's not out of fear that you do things. It's out of the joy of the celebration of feeling good, like me being at the bedside with veterans. They know that I care about them, and I know that I'm going to get a chance to relive and to feel the joy and the happiness and the laughter I brought into some really dismal situations. But the most important point in this life, and this is a Danianism as I say it, the system of judgment is this. If God couldn't come today and God sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did God make? Or what difference did your spiritual side make? Or what difference did the value of your love make? And once you start looking at situations, any situation, both their past and in your present situation, you will see it differently. And I think that what Kenny's trying to do and what all of us are really trying to do is open up people to that possibility by putting forth people, information, and opportunities. You don't have to believe it, but there's something for everybody. Catherine and I love to take the kids and just to watch them, you know, to mm-hmm. watch the excitement that comes in opportunities and the things that they're interested in. And if people have never come to one of these, I mean, they've been around since the very beginning. You're truly missing out. I mean, I noticed you're getting pretty addicted to them, George.
I pick and choose them, and you know what? I've been running into you a lot of them.
Well, I love these. I mean, this is family, and I see people for years and years and years. And I get to know them and the people who have their booths there and their mom-and-pop businesses, and it's what America's about, and it's spirituality and it's grassroots. And these people go and do something with this information.
Make some time for me Sunday night after my speech, okay?
I look forward to it. And thank you for everything that you're doing, and thank Tom, and keep up this good work.
You got it, Daniel. Thanks a lot. That's Daniel Brinkley. By the way, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. I'm George Norrie. Get ready now for 3 hours of Friday night into Saturday morning open lines, and there will be a special topic line opened up for those of you, but I'll tell you about that in a moment.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.